Hello and welcome back to this Trauma Super Conference. My name is Jaya Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am very pleased to be welcoming Aki Omori. Welcome, Aki.
Hi, Jaya. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. So Aki Omori is a woman of many talents. She's a somatic early trauma therapist, a certified practitioner of neuroaffective relational model, a somatic experiencing practitioner in training, a registered somatic movement educator and therapist, a certified teacher of body-mind centering. You have a diploma with integrative bodywork and movement therapy. You're a faculty member of Embody Move UK and a board member of the Body-Mind Centering Association. And on top of all of that, you've been a yoga teacher for over 20 years and you train yoga teachers and therapists in your private clinic in London, offering sessions that integrate various somatic approaches to trauma from talking, movement, touch, online and in person. So I'm very grateful to be having you on board on this conference all about trauma, therefore. And I'm wondering if you could start by telling us a little bit about your work and how it relates to, yeah, to sort of working with this, with early trauma and the somatic, how the somatic element comes in, how you work and how, yeah, tell me a bit about your work.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Thank you for the long introduction. So I have been, working as an educator for a long time in one way or another, and then expanded into more therapeutic work. And the recent years, the last sort of decade or so, I have been poking my head around, you know, working with the trauma. And now I feel like that's just my main body of work in my private clinic. And so the context of early trauma. So there's something about the early trauma I specialize in because I was already trained in developmental movement, infant developmental movement. So I kind of understand and kind of embodied understanding of, how we begin life and how we're affected by the environment and how we respond. And that the environment is kind of big part of the forming of the person. So that understanding was already there. So when we say early trauma, in my understanding, the early trauma is more to do with what happened in the early history of the person and how that might be manifesting in your life as an adult. So there might be some repeating kind of challenges or the relational problems, and something like that is often the area it manifests because the early trauma affects the forming of the identity.
Mm-hmm.
So something I don't want to use the word wrong, but something that was a bit challenging, you know, in the environment. When I say environment, it could be anything from, issues of the parents, they had issues, or it could be there's something to do with a memory of the birth, experiences to, or surgical experiences. It could be anything. And the cause could be something appear to be benign, but just the little person experienced it as a challenge, and they did not really get the kind of help they needed. Or there's not really the holding of that process and the little person experienced. And then that actually affects how they see themselves.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And we know through attachment theory, people are familiar with attachment theory and things like that, how much our early environment impacts the way we relate as adults. And like you say, early environment can include, of course, we're impacted by what our parents have gone through, and their own traumas are going to be played out with their kids because we're all human. But there's also, mm-hmm. In our early environment, we don't just have parents, right? I use the word parents, for others it's caregivers of different types, right? We all have lots of different caregivers, whether it is parents, biological or non-biological, aunties, uncles, other family members, non-family members, friends, teachers, nannies, you know, all kinds of different caregivers in our life. And not everyone is always very attuned. And so trauma happens, right? Or hurt happens. And then trauma, as many people who have watched these conferences now know, is formed not by the hurt itself, but by the holding environment around the hurt. So like you say, something that might seem benign or small can create a trauma, because when the nervous system gets activated, if there's not that holding environment to support the regulation, then that's when traumas occur. And then once they've occurred, then they become, you know, they can repeat and get worsened and have layers, because every time they're activated, that can happen. So I'm curious about your experience or your work around the somatic element of trauma.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jay, I could listen to you a whole hour.
Well, we're here to listen to you, but thank you.
No, I mean, but it's really, it's wonderful that, you know, things are more kind of being informed, and those little things are kind of taken more seriously. And then we give time to process, and so that's really great. You know, the last sort of 20 years or so, you know, the work in trauma just dramatically developed, and so I'm really part of that kind of wave of movement, like, you know, just one little droplet in a big movement, but we're kind of inching forward, you know, kind of we're all pioneers, you know, part of the pioneers. That's kind of how I see it. And I'm not answering the question just immediately, but I just really want to say that, you know, there's some people who just write a book, and some people come up with like a modality, and they were able to articulate and everything. But there are lots and lots of many people who are dedicating their work, you know, in the clinical work on a daily basis. And but I really would like to sort of see this kind of bigger movement of every single droplet that creates this wave.
Absolutely. I sometimes like to talk about the ripple effect. In fact, it's, I'm developing a course, an online course, which is looking at sort of power, privilege, and prejudice dynamics. So, you know, systemic power dynamics around gender, race, sexuality, all those kind of things. And looking at how, you know, often when things are so ingrained in a system, and trauma really is, it can feel really overwhelming, and we can feel really helpless and powerless in the face of such a big systemic issue, right? But like you're saying, we all have, if everyone starts contributing these little drops, it has this ripple effect, and then the ripples start connecting, and we can together, and this is why I love working on these conferences, because together, pooling all our resources and our knowledge and having these different modalities and better understanding, then we can start to create positive change in ourselves and in our environments, which will then impact other people that we're in contact with.
Yeah, I think it's really great, you know, the work you do, and, you know, all this, you know, the social justice and all this, the inclusivity and equality in those things. And, you know, I am in the process, you know, also myself, of just becoming aware of what that might be, what's my story might be, you know, working alongside of other people, and then their stories have been clearer, you know, say Black people, white people in a kind of white society, you know, that sort of thing. I'm neither. And I'm not even, you know, I'm not even like a second generation. I was not born in UK. I'm based in UK, but I'm immigrant. So, you know, what is my story? So I'm really very much in the process of finding my story right now. So thank you for, you know, bringing that. And also becoming aware, you know, something that, you know, this, like something we have been accepting, you know, whether it's a kind of systemic issues or like a really personal issues, you know, certain things are protected, so that we don't have to feel certain things, that has a kind of tone, unconscious sort of tone of, could be a bodily sensation of danger or shame or something, you know. So that's where the somatic comes in, I guess. It's not just a conceptual, you know, my own personal, you know, history, the journey have taken a long time. You know, my therapeutic process like took forever because my system was so well protected from me to access, you know, my kind of authentic truth, because there was a lot of shame, and I didn't even know what shame felt like. So when I was able to gradually, you know, out, you know, allowing that part to really come out, and then have the more compassionate and understanding of, you know, why I felt like that, and then, you know, and then that part is beginning to be really part of, you know, making who I am. So it took a long time for me to really get here, and so I'm slightly kind of digressing from the, you know, where the somatic comes in, which I can talk about in a minute. But because of my history, it's really difficult. So something like, you know, so spiritual practice like a yoga and meditation, mindfulness, all these things were really serving me to be more present and embodied. But then there was always something that was missing, that could not penetrate that protected barrier. Kind of internal system was so protected. You see in a family system, you know, the certain patterns protected, just so like you can't penetrate it because something is like high at stake. And so my own internal, and so I kind of just, part of me still struggled, you know, just not knowing what it was. And then I had to going to say, you know, find a therapy, a psychotherapy. And so I'm kind of going a little bit more into that. But then, even then, I could feel there was something going on. But while we're talking, I still could not really access it. And then I came across, say, work of Peter Levine, Dr. Peter Levine, and, you know, the trauma work had created my way in to connect that part of me. And then there's a lot of the little by little, you know, the process. So it just took me a long time. And it is funny, isn't it? You know, I guess I'm one of the kind of wounded healers, you know, time.
I think there's a lot of wounded healers in the world.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your own experience around that. And I think you're bringing in a really important point that can often get overlooked in this kind of work, is that protective mechanism, which can be, like you say, impenetrable almost, you know? And so we hear about all these like trauma healing modalities, like you say, there's mindfulness, there's, you know, there's different types of meditation and qigong and different types of body work and breathing work, and there's all these things that exist, and they're all fantastic, wonderful modalities, and they all involve sort of tuning into oneself and connecting to oneself and feeling things. But sometimes it can be really hard to feel things for those who have trauma, because our bodies have learned to protect us from feeling, you know, it's a natural human response to avoid feeling pain, discomfort, shame. Shame is a really, really paralyzing, difficult emotion to feel. Guilt, all these different emotions can come up. And so our bodies protect us, or our psyches protect us from feeling them. And we can, you know, and all kinds of things can happen from different types of disassociation and all of these kind of things. So I'm curious, both in your journey and in your work, how you said, like, the trauma work and Peter Levine's work and all these things have supported you, but how did how were you able to sort of honor that protecting part of yourself without, like, you know, just hammering through it, but also actually being able to reconnect with yourself and do this kind of somatic work?
So I think the process is really different from each individuals, and that needs to be really honored and respected. And but also that's the fun of, you know, the weaving the process for each person. There's something that what you said kind of touched me in the different places, to kind of inspired me to sort of speak about a few things. But even like in a somatic movement work that I was involved in, and while it was so fantastic, but because my own internal environment was not particularly safe to feel those things that come up, so often, you know, unconsciously, subconsciously, unconsciously, you know, what I was feeling, you know, there was a sense of maybe shame and the discomfort, and also the people who are holding. So there was a kind of hidden hypervigilance within myself, but also the people who are holding might not necessarily have the capacity to hold that person's or guide that person's process. Or if it's more educational settings, you know, sometimes they have to draw some kind of boundary to not go too much into the therapeutic process. So, you know, and then one needs to seek the individual process, you know, the individual therapy and things like that, but just my own. So there was also a fear around somebody having some kind of traumatic, even like small, you know, process. And then the person who is educator might not be able to, you know, meet them because they're on kind of fear.
And when you talk about people not being able to, like, either not being trauma informed or not being attuned to the person and not being able to hold space for them,
yeah,
is that like in sort of present day adult times?
Yes.
Or
are you yes. Yeah, so it's a kind of adult, yeah, present day adult, you know, kind of education, you know, in the settings in, you know, adult. It could be, you know, the yoga class, or, you know, it could be that as well. But not everybody is, you know, trained to, you know, hold that space or the process.
Right. So like you say, when people aren't particularly attuned, whether it's a yoga teacher or a therapist, and you'd hope therapists are more attuned, or anyone else, then of course it can reactivate or bring back up these childhood mm-hmm. traumas, is what I'm hearing you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes you feel really scared. So, you know, can actually sort of, you know, they go back to the shell, or, you know, their splitting happens again. So it's some form of re-traumatization or something. But because I didn't know what was happening with, you know, with myself, and also, as I said, my own internal environment was not safe.
Can you say more about that? What do you mean by that?
So internal environment. So like there's some sensations. It could be really the sensation, really, you know, I'm experiencing is associated or kind of linked or coupled with a sense of, say, a shame, you know, or something embarrassing. It's, in my case, often probably was like a really kind of hidden level of shame, I think. So I cannot really process it. And it really kind of, you know, can affect somebody's the relationship, you know, with others, you know, when that happens as well. And so I just noticed that, and then I needed to, you know, go and have more kind of trauma work. And then, you know, I think it's a big ask, you know, for people who teach yoga and everything, just to really be, you know, like all around that and everything, you know. And then, you know, just if it's educational setting, and then, you know, the person probably needs to go and have individual therapy or something. But there's just a little bit of kind of setting, but at least there's a kind of awareness, you know, around it. And I think another one is more kind of transference sort of level also, you know, the people are a bit scared of what's happening to somebody else. You know, I had one also in a group work, and then there was one person who fell over against the glass. The glass didn't break, but it made a noise.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of sounded a little bit dramatic. So everybody was slightly taken aback. And then there were teachers who just come in and say, oh, just don't worry, we're just going to carry on. But everybody was a bit like this and carrying on, right? And then there's somebody was attended, you know, the person who fell was attended, but still. And then another tutor comes in and said, hey, how are you guys feeling? You're all right. And then we all went, ah, like a really small things like that. And there's something in, you know, the elephant or whatever is kind of named. So, you know.
And I think I really appreciate in what you're saying how, you know, you really see that it's trauma isn't always the big things, right? People think trauma is these big events and that's what creates trauma. But the events as big events, as small events, as medium events, but like you say, the holding environment is not just what creates the trauma, but also what can re-traumatize and add layers to the trauma and perpetuate the trauma. Whereas if a holding environment is safe and supportive, then immediately it can assist and support not just breaking the cycle of repeating trauma, but also and beginning to heal trauma, right? So like you say, that example of something that appears so innocuous, someone had a, like fell into a thing, there was no major injuries, but it made a loud noise, everyone's nervous systems got activated slightly and was like, okay, what's going on? And then you have one response, which is, it's fine, let's move on and ignore it and dismiss the what's going on, which can, of course, anyone who's had that experience of having been dismissed as a child or any time, which many of us have, anyone who has trauma linked to that, to having their nervous system activated and being told it's fine. It's like the way we tell kids, like, don't cry, you're fine, rather than, hey, are you all right? What's going on? And so that can like reactivate something. And then you have this other response where people's like, okay, how is everyone doing? Is everyone okay? What's needed? And it's just more attuned. And again, this is something, you know, I teach, I talk about, is that how I said at the beginning, things happen, life happens, hurts happen, physical, emotional, we get traumatized, we get re-traumatized based on the holding environment, as you're saying. And we can also heal based on that environment. And if everyone's a little more attuned to what's going to their own environment and to the what's going on for other people, then that can support that. And I also hear, as you say, that when we have a lot of trauma, it can be difficult to be attuned, right? And it's a big ask to ask everyone to be trauma-informed, for all yoga teachers and all anyone working with people to be fully trauma-informed, and also to do the work in themselves. As you say, you had lots of shame in you that was very difficult to do your own healing journey, let alone be sensitive to other people's environment, right? So it's like we can see what's needed and we can also see why it's so difficult to get there.
You know, I think you just put it so beautifully. I think there's something about like almost like a parental or like a caregiver and the children. You know, when something happened, you know, if the caregiver, you know, is sort of like, oh, don't worry about it, and then that part of you is never recognized and seen, and then there's some kind of split happens, and then you just go on as if nothing had happened, but there's already fragmentations happening there. But if the caregiver just stops to say, hey, you know, and then like everyone goes, well, the child or children go, that's all we sometimes kind of needed, you know. So sometimes, you know, slightly kind of hesitated, or kind of slightly uncomfortable about the trauma informed, you know, what that means. And so if it's like just a cognitive understanding, which is a good start, understanding is a really good start. But if the person has kind of their own kind of embodied experience of that, and then there's something about the attunement and empathy and the, you know, compassion, understanding, and also less fear, you know, around that process of, you know, being with, you know, another. And yeah, so that's something, you know, the I noticed, you know.
So what I'm hearing in what you're sharing, I think there's a few different elements, but one of the things that I'm hearing is how, first of all, it makes me want to celebrate everyone who's showing up and listening to these talks, right? Because what you're sharing is the importance of, yeah, connecting to oneself and doing one's own work will then support us to be more attuned to other people once we learn to be more in tune with ourselves. So maybe you can tell me a bit more about, again, in your line of work, how you support people in being more in tune or attuned to themselves.
Welcoming everything, you know, whatever comes up, you know, just welcome, be kind of curious and welcoming everything. It's a group work, and individual work is very, very different. Very different, I guess. And the group work, and I don't know, just sort of just a little acknowledgement, but also knowing my own limit as a person who's holding a group. You know, we say, okay, create the safe space for everybody. I don't think it is always possible, right? But then the physically, we can just look and say we are safe. We can name those things. But if their internal environment, coming back to the internal environment, you know, if they have like some kind of old stories kind of, you know, playing up in their head or something, and then they, that can never, you know, be completely, you know, controlled by, you know, whoever is holding the space. But I have, you know, I acknowledge my own limits to that, but whatever comes up, like I say, just allow, you know, welcome, allow, and then just somehow, you know, they're supporting in a kind of, maybe sometimes it's more towards kind of containing, because it might not feel safe enough for the person to really allow that process to, you know, take place. So just noticing if it is the right space for the person or the persons. And sometimes it is the right place. So becoming like a group process, and then everybody kind of feels like regulated and better, you know, for it as well. And also others kind of watching, and then how that person is really taken care, and how the group is taking care. And then that is really regulating for the people. And so that way, you know, maybe I work in a group process, because I don't know, I can't be prepared for everything, but, you know, I'll just meet it, you know, each moment when it comes up. Because the if you try to control, you get just even more nervous, you know. And also I try to, in a group process, and also individual process as well, you know, I try to sort of provide resources first. So if you're beginning to feel a little bit spaced out, do this.
Right.
So we just do it right at the beginning of the session. You know, what is it like to really, just really simple things like, you know, they're feeling the bones of the ground, or, you know, and some form of orienting, or, you know, do something. So they have something to do for themselves first. But also I really see that happening also, you know, I'm here. And then, so this is becoming not my job, but this is kind of, you know, we're working together. So more kind of autonomy in a person. So that's another thing. So just the, you know, giving them some tools to really kind of deal with. But sometimes if you sort of say too much of, you know, this might happen, then it usually happens. So, you know, so that as well, it's funny when people talk about trauma and then people beginning to remember about trauma as well. So this is just a really, you know, constant dance.
Yeah, and I think that's really beautiful, that idea of like a dance, as you say, the constant dance, especially because you work so much with movement, right? Which I'd love to hear more about in a second. But I just really want to appreciate the way that you know, that you create safe spaces by, number one, recognizing your own limits, right? So it's not saying, here I am, an expert on everything, I can handle everything. You're acknowledging your own limits, and in so doing actually creates a safe space. Because when someone claims to have, you know, I'm always mistrustful of people who say they can do everything and anything, right, and handle any situation. It's also, I really hear that, how important it is to name what might arise so that people are prepared, right? So that things aren't as scary, and it's not like, what's going on? It's saying things might happen, and also being careful not to be too leading and not say this will happen, or even being careful not to be too specific about what might happen, because that might then, you know, people will,
yeah, people,
like when people say don't happens, think of an elephant, then everyone starts thinking about an elephant, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think there's something really precious and important and empowering and healing about holding a space and creating a safe space by honoring everyone in the space, whether it's just working on an individual level, so two of you in the space, or working in a group level with lots in the space, honoring your, who you are, your own journey, your own limits, whilst also, you know, recognizing that when you're facilitating, then, you know, maybe less vulnerable than when you're when you're not. And then, yeah, and letting people know what may arise, what may not, that, and just that it's all okay is what I'm hearing what you're saying, you know, because reactions are going to happen, but that sort of attuned responsiveness to different reactions, to different emotions that arise, rather than saying this is what's expected, this is how it should be, and this is how it shouldn't be. It's, as you say, it's just accepting and attuning to each individual situation, knowing that, yeah, that you're not sure what's going to arise for the people, you're not sure what's going to arise for yourself at times, I'm sure, and that's part of the work. Now, I'm mindful of time, but I'd love to hear a bit more about your movement work within all of this, and yeah, your movement work, and maybe we talked a bit off camera about how life moves, right? And that I know that that's something that's alive for you right now.
So how life moves, you know, there was this image that I use in my on my website, and the lovely designer just created this image, and there's a seedling within the tube, and it's shooting, so the stem is kind of growing up towards the sun, and then the root is kind of finding its way to the earth. And so there was an experiment by a scientist, like, you know, the 150 years ago or something. So I just got it from like a different, you know, the book and different inspirations. But there's something about that's how our life moves. So whatever the environment, you know, we adapt to the kind of restriction of the environment, but life is still moving. It's that's the life force expression. And then as the restriction of the tube is beginning to, you know, disappear, as soon as that, it moves towards the sun. And then the roots. So underneath all this, like whatever the obstacles and, you know, traumatic experiences and everything, but just really recognizing or just remembering the presence of the life force. And so that really kind of holds the my therapeutic space, you know, very much. So even working with a client who cannot really see that, it doesn't really feel like that, because what they see is the obstacles and the restrictions, and also the some kind of psychological identity, you know, that is associating with this restricted sort of compromised sort of, you know, setting. But that we can hold that larger image, you know, the larger picture, you know, for them while they're going through the removing of their, you know, the obstacle, and the really appreciating the obstacle that protected, you know, maybe protected it from, like, I don't know, the cold, you know, weather or something, you know, whatever it is. So that's the, you know, everything's an expression of life, and the movement, you know, the gesture, you know, we use, and then also, you know, moving through the sometimes in people, you know, the inner somatic experiencing as well, but, you know, other modalities use the movement to complete something. Or what is this? And when I do this, you know, what is this? What's the message? What is serving? Or when it's like this, or just let's just go in there and just hide. You know, just okay, just do the hiding, and, you know, without kind of going into the regression, because then you are identifying too much with the helpless sort of young part. So just keeping, you know, remembering you're here with me, you know, as an adult and in this kind of body, but, you know, just playing. And then, you know, the movement really shows more than the words can express. And also when we're in the movement, and then also having the kind of progression from the movement, sometimes I use the drawing before they can put into words, so that quickly, you know, trying to go into the words, and sometimes we also lose the essence, and then kind of old sort of persona can take over. So let's just take a little bit of a moment. You know, we use the drawings, or, you know, I use anything, you know, the many modalities.
Beautiful. I love that idea of the life force will always find a way. And sometimes we don't see it. Sometimes we really see all the restrictions and constraints, but there is a part of us, just like in nature, that's, reaching for the sun and reaching for the soil. And I love the way you talk about movement and drawing, and that, there are so many modalities to get in touch with what needs to be worked on or what's flowing without having to use words. Words are great if people are able to, and if there's not, I love that you use all these other modalities. Aki, so thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Despite a few tech glitches and internet cutouts, we've managed to have a really fantastic conversation. So how can people find out more about you and your work?
You can just go to my website, and I see clients individually, online, and also if you're in London, I have one-to-one in person, so I can use my patchwork to help regulate and the movement. And the patchwork's great, just to pushing the time a little bit. Patchwork's also great because that's how we grew, right? And so just part of the changing the pattern is just really kind of encouragement of what's happening, welcome what's happening, but also there's a time of inhibition, inhibiting the habit, and then so that the parts of the body can find another pathway. So the patchwork and the talking work, it just I work really differently with each person to support their process. So it's in the website, and be in touch.
Amazing. And the website is
akiomori.com. Sorry, I should have said akiomori.com.
wonderful. Thank you so much. And yeah, I love having chats with you about all these modalities that we don't hear so much about, touch, movement, drawing, words, and that they all work together, and looking at, early childhood stuff and how it's appearing now using these modalities sounds really powerful. So I encourage everyone to go check out your work, and thank you once again.
Great. Thank you, Jaya.